giving energy and enthusiasm to millions of Americans.
You know, Lion Ted Cruz came today. He couldn't draw 100 people. 100 people. You remember during the debate when he started lecturing me on New York values like we're no good. Unbelievable.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It is 5:09. Good morning, everyone. Thursday, April 7th, 2016. Welcome to another day. Welcome to another business day, another edition of The Opening Bell. Let's get right to the overnight global intel from the WGN market desk. Dow futures are pointing downward this morning, off almost 75 points. Oil's trading lower as well. Overseas last night, still ongoing, the European markets. Germany the lowest this morning, the DAX off about 22. In Asia, the Nikkei closed higher, and the Hang Seng closed to higher as well. What we'll be watching today is this. The Freddie Mac report is out on this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. The Federal Reserve is going to release its February report on consumer borrowing. That's coming up a little bit later on this morning. Here are some of the top headlines this morning that you'll be reading about. The Fed minutes released yesterday show that the Federal Reserve board members are very concerned about the economy moving forward and that they are going to take a cautious approach as they discuss whether or not to have further interest rates this year. Minutes show that all but one or two, I believe, of the Federal Reserve members were solidly in the camp of being cautious. We heard from a financial analyst about this morning and says that when you put this all together, Jeff Tomasulo, of Vespula Capital, he says this is going to be good for the markets, especially the equity markets.
What the equity market really likes is decisiveness, right? What's the action that the Fed's going to take? Once you have the uncertainty out there, the markets can behave like a free market, if you want to say we have a free market right now. But and I think that's one of the reasons we had a lot of uncertainty going into the beginning of the year when we had the sell-off. Once the Fed came out and was like, all right, we're raising interest rates, and now they've obviously changed their mind and they're saying, hey, we're going to hold off, the market can do what it needs to do.
Also yesterday, the U.S. government unveiled a new rule aimed at protecting consumers when it comes to retirement savings. Here's the U.S. Labor Secretary Tom Perez.
Today's rule ensures that putting clients first is no longer simply a marketing slogan. It's now the law.
Some are being critical, though, of this new plan. They say that it gives the industry more of the oversight, more of the power than it does investors. Also, the U.S. Justice Department has filed a lawsuit to block the proposed merger of oil field service giants Halliburton and Baker Hughes. Here's what the Attorney General Loretta Lynch said about it.
This deal would eliminate vital competition in more than 20 markets, and it would hamper America's efforts to become energy independent, a setback that would harm not only our economic well-being, but also our national security. Put simply, it is a bad deal.
U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch. 5:12 on the Opening Bell. As I mentioned earlier, later this morning, the report on mortgages comes out. Freddie Mac Mortgages in the studio this morning is David Hochberg of Pearl Mortgage. David and I were talking before the broadcast began this morning that, you know, millennials, we were talking about millennials and, yeah, and buying homes. And, you know, I saw a report earlier that they're buying bigger homes. I don't believe
That goes against everything that I come in contact with every single day of the week, every month that I've been in this business so far. That I don't know where they get their data from or what state it's in. It might be state specific, but the millennials that I talk to in Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan, and the surrounding states, is they're very concerned about homes. They've seen their parents. You know, face it. Let's look at it. Millennials are what? Are in their 20s. What happened when they were in their teens? Their parents got wiped out or their neighbors got wiped out in 07 and 08 when everything stopped, okay, when the music stopped and there was only one chair left and there were 100 butts for that chair,
right,
and property values dropped in this listening area anywhere from 20 to 80 to 90%. And some of those areas are back fully and some of them are just starting to come back. So the millennials that I talk to are getting guidance from their parents, believe it or not, saying buy small, don't overshoot your target, and make sure that you have plenty of money outside your budgetary constraints to make emergency payments if a water heater goes. Because, Steve, as you know, a water heater never goes bad.
Oh, yeah. And washers and dryers never go
bad. Washer, dryers never break. Dishwashers never go like mine. And, you know, you never have to buy a new refrigerator like I have to do in my rental this week. Okay, so they're a lot more cautious, at least the millennials. Or maybe I'm just talking to the millennials that are more fiscally responsible.
Maybe, yeah.
I just don't believe that report in all due respect.
Yeah, I stopped reading it when they said that not only were they buying homes, they were buying bigger homes like their parents. I stopped reading it.
No, you know, they're going the opposite way, at least the millennials I'm talking to. And maybe they're just taking the advice of their parents, and their parents are very conservative, is that if you could fit into a size 34-inch pants, buy the 32-inch pants and make sure you've got room to have the dessert, you know, have the dessert and all that stuff. But don't overshoot what you can afford. And you could always sell that house and move up in 5 to 7 years when you're making more money or have a family or get married or get divorced or do whatever. But definitely don't blow all your money on your first home. That's crazy.
Our conversation today is going to focus on reverse mortgages. After we check traffic, we'll come back. We'll talk about the fact and fiction of that. I'd also like to get your take on mortgage rate, interest rates.
Sure.
And then the Freddie Mac report's all coming up. We're chatting with David Hochberg of Pearl Mortgage. You can find him on Twitter at David Hochberg.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Signals from the Fed that an interest rate hike is unlikely this month sent the bulls into the market yesterday. The Dow Jones gained 112 points. The S&P 500 picked up 21. The NASDAQ rose 76. Investors, though, are still concerned about corporate profit reports due out soon. U.S. Steel says it's cutting 25% of its non-union workforce in North America, or roughly 750 jobs. The Pittsburgh-based company is struggling with the impact of falling oil prices and increased imports of Chinese steel. Honda customers had their monthly car payments taken out of their bank accounts twice this month, the automaker insisting the double billing was a payment processing error. Honda says it's sending out refunds starting today. Amazon has expanded its free same-day delivery service to 11 more metropolitan areas, bringing the total number of U.S. regions served by the feature to 27. Amazon Prime shoppers can get their purchases every day of the week if they spend at least $35. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 520. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. David Hochberg in the studio with us this morning talking about mortgages, reverse mortgages, as a matter of fact. We see these commercials, David, all the time on television, and they seem to be targeting older folks,
yes.
The retiree set. What's the facts?
Those commercials on the fake Hollywood sets walking down the the wonderful
Brimley,
street?
You know, those?
Yeah, what's up with that? The reverse mortgages, in order to qualify, one spouse has to be at least 62, or one person, and, you know, if you're married and you're 70, at least somebody's got to be over 62. And that changed last year, where both parties had to be over 62. Now only one has to be over 62. It's based upon, here's some of the facts about them. It's based upon 100-year life expectancy. So the older you are, the more money you're going to get. So a 90-year-old person is going to get more than a 62-year-old person because your life expectancy at 90 is less than your life expectancy at 62. I'm not trying to be morbid right now, mm-hmm. but that's just, those are the rules, okay? A reverse mortgage is a wonderful product if used effectively, just like morphine is a wonderful product if used effectively. And if not, you'll be drinking your breakfast out of a brown bag and living under a viaduct, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a need for a reverse mortgage, here's what a reverse mortgage is. A reverse mortgage is where the bank, you still own the home. The biggest misnomer that I get, Steve, is that the government's going to own my house and I don't want the government owning my house and this damn bank's going to own my house. You own the house. Okay, we just talked. You've got a condo on the north side. You owe whatever on your mortgage, $100,000, $200,000 on your mortgage. The bank has a mortgage against your house. You're the owner. And that's the same exact thing with a reverse mortgage. The bank has a mortgage against the house. You still own the house. Nobody's taking your house. Nobody's taking your aunt's house, your mother's house, your sister's house. It's your house. You still own the house. It's just an investment vehicle where you could tap out the equity to live and live comfortably. I don't like to call people over 62, senior citizens, I like to call them experienced borrowers.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the misconceptions come from the home equity loan area? Because, you know, you're always warned, don't do that unless you absolutely have to.
Right. I think when I sit down and talk with elected officials on the state and national levels and talk to them about reverse mortgages, the first thing out of their mouth is always, I hear those are bad loans. I go, okay, let me give you an example. I go, let's say state elected official or federally elected official. Let's say your mom is living in a home that's worth $300,000 and she doesn't have a mortgage. Okay. And she's 80 years old. God bless her. And she could qualify based upon a $300,000 mortgage at 80 years old for about $180,000, $170,000 reverse mortgage. Instead of her writing you a check, instead of you writing her a check every single month for $1,000 to help your mom, because she can't make it on her $12,342 that she gets from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's just not enough with Social Security. You know, do you want to make that $1,000 a month payment to help her with her meds and help her with her health care and help her with all her expenses? Or would you rather tap out of the equity of her home? And live off the equity of her home that she's paid off and lived off of, and she's living in a $300,000 asset. And she's like, well, nobody's ever explained it to me like that before. I go, well, that's the fact about a reverse mortgage. It's a checkbook on your house that you've paid off, that you've paid into, that has come back with the real estate values solidifying and increasing over the past couple of years. It's an asset within your portfolio that you have to look at. And when you're 80 and you've outlived your assets, one of my realtors talks about how her parents never thought that they would make it past 70 because they smoked and they drank and they lived hard and they had a great time. Her father just passed away at 85.
Yeah.
Ran out of money.
Yeah.
Ran out of money because the poor guy, God bless him. He had a great time. He never thought he'd see 71. He made it to 85. He was tapped out like 5-6 years early.
And this is a bigger deal because if this new concept is called a retirement in place, where people are retiring in their own homes instead of going to a
Correct.
Retirement community, they're living in their homes after they retire. This could benefit that generation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And let's look at another step. A spouse passes away. You've been living in the home with that spouse. You raised your family. You raised your kids. Your grandkids came over for the last 40, 50 years. A lot of my clients, okay, a lot of my borrowers, 40, 50 years. They don't want to move out of their house. They're self-sufficient. They're fine. Maybe they need to build a ramp. Maybe they need to lower the sink a little bit. Maybe they need a little help getting around because, you know, as you get a little older, things get a little more difficult. Heck, I'm 49 and I can't do the things that I did when I was 29, okay? But maybe you just need a little assistance. You could tap into the equity of your home, Steve, to make the modifications you need to make your house more comfortable. If that's where you feel the most comfortable, why take your parent, your loved one, out of the place that they are most comfortable living with, that they know where everything is for the past 50 years, that's where they've lived. Make it more comfortable for them to live and make it more comfortable for them to afford it. And it's a great tool. All the money that comes out on a reverse mortgage is tax-free. There's no income tax on it. And there's strategic plans that in the event that you pass away, you can still leave the home to your brother, sister, mother, cousin, daughter, son. You could still leave the house to them, and you could build it into your estate plan. There's nothing to be scared about with the reverse mortgage.
And that was one of the other questions that I was going to ask, and that's sort of one of the fictions about this is that of what you just said about the leaving it to your heirs, and your heirs would be responsible.
Still can. You still can. Steve, if you have a $200,000 house and take out a $100,000 mortgage, and let's just say you've built the mortgage up by, you know, you don't have to make the mortgage payment. That's the key with the reverse mortgage. You still have to make the tax payment. You still have to pay the insurance on the place. Other than that, there is an interest payment associated with it, but it gets added on to the back end of your loan. So let's just say that you have a $200,000 mortgage. The real estate market, God forbid, collapsed like it did in 07, 08, and your place is worth $100,000. You pass away, and I pass away. I'm your father, and I leave the house to you, Steve. Steve owns a $100,000 home with a $200,000 mortgage. Now what happens? Absolutely nothing to Stephen. Stephen is protected because the bank has, it's an FHA loan. The bank has insurance on that loan. They write an insurance claim to the federal government. The federal government writes a check for $100,000 to pay the shortage. Stephen and his family is not impacted on that home, and the bank sells the house.
Real quick, we have about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
More interest rates.
Interest rates are great. Yeah. They are lower than they were 8 years ago. I just talked to somebody, 6.875% first-year loan, 9% second loan, living in Homer Glen yesterday.
Oh.
So if you've got those rates, if you're over 4%, please, for the love of God, 312-751 1333. Go to WGNDavid.com. Rates are still low. It's still a great time. Let us at least evaluate what you have to see if we could do better.
David Hochberg, VP Lending, Pearl Mortgage. You can find him on Twitter at David Hochberg, PearlDavid.com. David, thanks for being on the Open and Bell this morning.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:39. Welcome back to the Opening Bell. This is Masters Week, as you heard Dave Ennett just talk about in sports. Golf season getting underway locally. A perfect time to profile Kemper Luznik and Kemper Sports, Chicago area based public relations company, sports management, events management, sports marketing agency. And we're happy to have the CEO of Kemper Luznik on this morning, Steve Skinner. Good morning, Steve.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell. This must be an exciting time for you. The golf season getting underway. You have a lot of beautiful golf courses around the world. If we could, let's talk about that, first of all. This is big business, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's an exciting time. The kickoff of the Masters always is kind of the unofficial start, at least in the Midwest, the unofficial start to the golf season. We'd like the weather to be a little warmer here in Chicago, but we're excited to get another great season underway.
WGN's sports director Dave Ennett at the desk here too. He's going to join in. But Steve, I was going to ask you this. You know, aside from focusing on golf, let's talk about the management that your company does. You have seemingly all of these balls in the air. How difficult, how challenging is this business?
Well, you know, the golf business, we have about 120 properties around the country, and it's a tough business. It's a fun business to be in, but, you know, we're in a situation in golf where over the last 20 years we had an overbuilding by the industry. So in most markets we're in an oversupply market, and we have a good core group of about 24, 25 million golfers, but in a lot of areas there's too many golf courses and not enough golfers. So it's a challenge as an operator for our company to deliver a great service, a great experience, and continue to attract new people to the game.
You can follow Kemper Luznik on Twitter at Kemper Luznik. Steve, by the way, is only the second CEO of Kemper Luznik, Kemper Sports. Dave, you're here. You know this, the ins and outs of this too. This is a big deal, and these are beautiful properties that are managed.
Well, some really spectacular properties. Steve, good morning. Some of them I have been fortunate enough to play here in this area. The one that's on the list that I've always wanted to see is Bandon Dunes out on the West Coast, but
That was a hint.
Yeah, well, no. I'm not looking for an invitation. Right? I could always go out there, but... Steve, it seemed for a while that the courses were crowded. It was tough to get a tee time. There was a real boom in the game, and then there was a building boom as well. New courses coming in, and you mentioned now there are a lot of courses. What's the industry doing to attract more players to make sure you have a steady stream of golfers moving forward?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You're exactly right. There was we built about 20%, added about 20% to the golf supply in the 1990s, and the industry is really focused on not only attracting new people to the game, but retaining the existing players and getting existing players to play more. So there's a lot of great initiatives working with the PGA of America. Get Golf Ready is a program that introduces new golfers to the game, makes them feel comfortable learning the game and playing the game. As you all know, it's a difficult game to master. I don't know that you ever master it. But the other thing we're doing in this industry is really changing the way we look at the game to attract more millennials to the game. The millennial generation doesn't necessarily have 4 hours plus to play golf. They have a lot of family responsibilities. So we have alternative facilities looking at nine-hole rounds, shorter rounds, and making the game more welcoming to younger players as well.
How has technology impacted that? Now with you go to a golf course and there's GPS in the golf cart, for instance.
Yeah, no, that has made a big – technology has helped a lot in the equipment, making the golf more enjoyable for a lot of people. There's GPS in the cart. We're seeing people, you know, play music in the car. People are connected all the time. You know, 20 years ago, you were supposed to leave your cell phone at the door when you went to play golf, but now everyone's connected 24/7, and we're embracing that in a lot of facilities.
We've been talking about golf, but I know that you have mentioned before in other media that you'd like to maybe get into football and lacrosse and maybe even rugby. Is this where the future of Kuemper Lesnik may be headed?
Well, I think, you know, with golf is at our core, it's about 90% of our business, but we're also very active in the sports marketing events arena. We run a number of NCAA basketball tournaments. We'll be starting a new one. Don't want to break the news, but we're going to start a new one in Chicago later this year. We're also looking at other areas of other sports popularity. We do some work with the NFL for the upcoming NFL draft on the public relations side. So we're really a full breadth of sports activities. Sports is a core business, is a big business in America, and we love being a part of it.
You have probably the premier preseason or non-conference college basketball tournament, the Maui Invitational. There's the waiting list to get into that, isn't there?
There is. There is. We have a great new sponsor in Maui Gym Sunglasses, and the tournament is going on 35-plus years. It's a fantastic venue and a fantastic tournament, and it happens before Thanksgiving every year. And well, we just finished the national championship on one end. We're getting ready for a 2016 event. We have four of the top 20 teams in the country coming, led by North Carolina, which came oh so close to winning its sixth national championship.
Steve Skinner is the CEO of Kuemper Lesnik. Mr. Skinner, thanks for being with us on the opening bell. Hopefully we can have you back and chat some more. Dave?
I'd love to.
Steve, I did want to ask you, you're running a hole-in-one promotion with kind of a unique twist at your properties?
It is. It's a great promotion. We throughout this year, anyone who has a hole-in-one at one of our properties wins a all-expense-paid trip. You have to get your own airline. You have to get down there, but to one of five resorts in Mexico, the Vedanta Resorts, which are fabulous five-star resorts. So it's one of our promotions to get more people to play golf and make golf fun. So go out and play as much as you can, get a hole in one, and win a trip to Mexico.
It's a good thing you weren't offering that at the Masters Par 3 tournament yesterday. I think there were nine of them.
Yeah, we talked about that. We'd love to invite any of those that had a hole in one at the Masters yesterday to come on down.
Steve, thanks again for being on the opening bell. You can again follow at Kuemper Lesnik on Twitter and KuemperLesnik.com.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:50 on the WGN market desk. Dow futures lower by about 72 points. Oil also trading lower. Let's get the latest on commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. As we look back at yesterday's livestock trade in the Midwest, cash hog prices pretty much steady because we're coming into a period, apparently, where packers are dealing with seasonally tight supplies. One Indiana dealer said, "We do need numbers of hogs for the end of the week. I don't think there's a lot of numbers to go around," adding that farmers are current or on time sending hogs to market. The weight of hogs in the Iowa-Minnesota hog market yesterday, the hog weights averaged 284.2 pounds for the week, ended April 2nd. That was up 7/10 of a pound from a week earlier. And even though it's less than a pound increase, a lot of hogs puts a lot of pork on the market. Turning to the grain trade yesterday at the Chicago Board of Trade, wheat came under pressure because crop conditions were pretty good. 59% of the winter wheat crop rated good to excellent in the report that came out earlier this week. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
It's 5:52 on the opening bell. The U.S. Treasury Department's latest proposed rules on tax-avoiding corporate mergers could cause more mergers and acquisition deals to fall apart. Government's clamping down on those deals, also known as inversion deals. The president spoke about it earlier this week.
When companies exploit loopholes like this, it makes it harder to invest in the things that are going to keep America's economy going strong for future generations. It sticks the rest of us with the tab. While the Treasury Department actions will make it more difficult and less lucrative for companies to exploit this particular corporate inversions loophole, only Congress can close it for good.
Pfizer and Allergan's deal fell apart this week. Several other big deals, maybe as many as seven pending inversions, could fall apart, including the $16 billion merger of Milwaukee-based Johnson Controls and Ireland-based Tyco International. ABC News correspondent Lana Zak has been covering this in Washington. She joins us on the opening bell this morning. Lana, the president to government seems pretty serious on cracking down on this.
That's exactly right. Pfizer and Allergan would have become the largest pharmaceutical company in the world, and those corporate taxes wouldn't have been felt here in the United States. Even though Pfizer's operations would continue largely to be based here, they would have technically then said that their corporate headquarters were in Ireland, so they were going to take advantage of this so-called inverted tax loophole. And all of that meant that it would have continued to take advantage of American infrastructure, American workers, but not have to pay American taxes. And that's what the president wanted to stop.
And the president was pretty straightforward about this. He says, you know, listen, the rest of us are paying our fair share. This is, and he sort of suggested that some of these corporations are doing an end run around being a good corporate citizen.
That's exactly right. You know, we've heard a lot on the campaign trail about trying to bring American companies back to the United States. One of the things that becomes very interesting when you're talking about this problem, this tax loophole, is that there are a lot of American companies that, in fact, are in the United States, but they're not paying their taxes. And that's where you have to sort of wonder, why do you think you can get away with doing this, and why isn't our government doing something about this before now?
He has asked the Congress to close some of these loopholes. How big of a challenge is this going to be in an election year?
You know, it's tough to say. At one level, constituents really are firmly in favor of closing these tax loopholes that benefit big corporations at the cost of people like you and me. However, the big corporations also provide donations to a lot of these elected officials, and they may need that if they're in tight races. So we're going to have to see how that actually plays out. It's one of those issues that doesn't have a clear party line drawn in it. There is some room for bipartisanship, so some people are optimistic that something can be done on this issue, but how it will actually play out, that's when it gets sticky, when elections, frankly, are at stake.
Is there a sense of how many corporations have done this or are doing this and how big of an issue this is?
It certainly is a big issue. It's something that has become even more widespread in recent years. And one of the things that companies do, that part of what makes it so egregious, is that they are called serial inverters. They will start off with one company here in the United States and do this merger with another company in a foreign land and then call themselves based over there. Then they will continue to do that over and over again with more companies based in the United States, continuing to merge. And so it could be the vast majority of these mergers are all happening with U.S. companies, but they continue to claim every time they marry these companies, they continue to claim that they are based over in that foreign country. So it has become a problem that is even more widespread. And in terms of quantifying it, it becomes almost impossible to do because of all of these mergers.
What do you think the next step is going to be that we see in this?
Next step, we're going to see, frankly, and we're already starting to see a halt to some of these mergers immediately. That's going to happen. The Treasury Department announced for the next 3 years there's going to be this new rule in place where they're not going to look at your ability. I'm trying not to get too far in the weeds on this, but that for the next 3 years, these corporate inversions of these serial corporate inverters, they're not going to count those. So they're going to still say, hey, here's your tax bill, regardless of what you say you owe or where you believe that you're based, we're still going to say this. After that, then it becomes a congressional issue, and permanent solutions have to come from the U.S. Congress.
ABC News correspondent Lana Zak with us from our Washington Bureau this morning on the opening bell. That's our program for today. Our producer is Mary Sandberg, with production help from Bennett Wakenight. Our engineer is Ben Cortez. The Steve Cochran Show is next. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition of The Opening Bell at 5 o'clock. And remember, you can find the podcasts of our show online at WGNRadio.com.